This is what it's about, Zeth. What we do. Being a watcher at the rim, this is why. My father never understood, and I suspect your people never did either. You can. This is what we fight for. Those looks, those tears, that joy. Our duty has a cost, as you said. We have proof of that. But if there's a difference between us, it's this. I know the why.
Welcome back to Following Know It on a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 240, and we are in chapters 40 through 42. Elliot, how are you?
Excellent.
Paul?
One step better than Elliot. I'm going to just one-up him.
Challenge
excellent
accepted.
Plus one.
Excellent plus one?
Yeah. Yes, excellent plus one.
Okay. This week, we are ending day three in Wind and Truth. We have some showdowns with Zeth and Adolin to discuss. Elliot, do you have two words to summarize 40, 41, and 42, the end of day three?
Yes, I do. My two words, they're a little bit odd, but my explanation, I think, will make sense. The two words I picked to summarize chapter 40, 41, 42 of Wind and Truth are truth swallowed. And I know that's kind of weird, okay, but there's a couple things going on here. One, I mean, it's partially cheating to pick truth, I feel like, because that's like a major theme running throughout this whole book, right? But there's a moment in chapter 40, which I think might be a bit of the revelation of the truth, like the truth from the title of the book, in that Zeth talks about this sacred truth that the Shin people were entrusted with, and that they were told the enemy's coming back. You need to prepare. Here's the honor blades, protect them, be ready to fight when the desolation comes and they come back. Like, that is the all caps, bold, whatever font gets your attention, sacred truth. Truth swallowed is me trying to work in the word swallowed, because there's this moment in chapter 40 that has me really intrigued. They come across the villagers, the peasants or whatever in Shinovar, and they're terrified that the soil will swallow us. What does that mean? What does that mean? And then I'm cramming truth and swallowed together, because throughout all these chapters, Zeth is still trying to kind of wrestle with the truth, and he's still just like having a hard time swallowing it. And Kaladin's trying to explain it to him. He's trying to kind of push the, hey man, you got to come to grips with this. You got to come to reality. Throw aside all these lies that you've been told in the past and that your friend is telling you now, and you got to accept it. And he's like having trouble swallowing it all.
Paul, how about you?
All right. My two words, which I must say that what you bring up about truth is really cool, because I've had my eye on that. Early, we got mentioned in this book about the wind, capital W, the wind, as like an entity. And I've been wondering if there's going to be an entity that is truth. So that's really cool. My two words are endurance and stalwart. They don't go together necessarily, but kind of for each story that we're following in this episode. Endurance, I chose for more so primarily for Kaladin and Zeth. They're kind of on their own. And endurance, I wanted to almost choose the word perseverance, but I feel like they are facing adversity, but it's more internal, I guess, where I feel like they're more so enduring things, I guess, if that makes sense. They're going through a lot. They're not necessarily seeing a ton of fruit for their efforts. They've been in this holding pattern of, what is Zeth's purpose here? Will Zeth have a better, I don't know, mental health state? You know, things like that, where they're kind of just having to endure the struggle of it. Maybe that is perseverance, but anyways, I chose endurance, and I chose stalwart, which I think is a really fun word, for Adolin. I looked up the definition, and it is an adjective, typically, being as loyal, reliable, and hardworking. And I feel like that is a great definition for Adolin. He's very loyal, as we've seen with, at least in recent days, maybe, with Shallan and things like that, and loyal to his cause and very hardworking. We see him here with the all the Azish people and everybody, like in this dome, this whole city with Yonagon, everybody. He's been very hardworking and diligent and loyal, and not, he's not just there to be like, oh, I want to see what I can do, and then I'm going to go back to my peaceful abode type of thing. Like, he's really fighting for these people. And I think that takes like a step of courage and things. So I thought that was a good way to describe each little storyline we're looking at today.
Sounds good. Elliot, do you have any summary that we haven't covered with those words?
Yeah, let me hit anything else that we go through in these chapters. So chapter 40 is Kaladin and Zeth approaching the Stone Ward Monastery. They find the village people like hiding in the buildings, and then they go into the monastery and they find a shaman waiting there for them with Taln's honor blade. Epic reveal moment. Then we flash over to Adolin super fast, and he's fighting. That's going to be a common, I think, part of my summaries here. Adolin fights. Chapter 41 is Zeth dueling the shaman and all the epic surge binding that we see in that series of events. And then we flash back to Adolin and he's still fighting. And chapter 42 is Zeth like beating the shaman, realizing, okay, we got to go do all the things in Shinovar and talking through that. And then Adolin is done fighting by this chapter and is talking with Maya about what do we need to do here? They're kind of celebrating. And Maya says, I need to go get the honor spren. Adolin says, okay, go get the honor spren. So Maya leaves to go get honor spren. And then we actually jump back to Kaladin and Zeth real quick at the end of chapter 42 for some interesting moments there where they talk about purpose of why they do things, and I think the wind shows up and they have a chat with the wind really fast, and that ends day 3.
Sounds good. Paul, before we get to epigraphs, do we have a patron?
I'm glad you asked, Trevor. We do. This week I have a bit of a I will do my best to drink, but I would love to give a shout out to our newest surgeon, Aaron. Thank you so much, Aaron. So I'll pour one out for you, if you will, I guess. You know, I'll try to find a new cup every time. So I have a lovely tea kettle with your name on it. So thank you so much for your help, Aaron. Much, much appreciated.
Thank you, Aaron.
One of these days, Paul is going to run out of silly things to drink out of, but it is not this day. So thank you, Aaron.
Seeing how much he's going to wet his hoodie before he's done with that little stint over there. A decent amount was the answer. Okay.
Before I'm done, I'm going to be totally soaked. But right now, just a healthy amount of drops on me, water on me at the moment. But it'll only get worse. So,
all right. To finish out our epigraphs from day 3, we have, quote, "The heralds are essentially no more. They are rejected by their blades. We must travel to the Well of Control within the shroud of the fragments of the dead moon. There we will find our destiny. We cannot stop him from destroying us. It is time." Elliot, I have a question for you, Mr. Physical Copy Reader. Is Well of Control capitalized?
I don't think so. I'm going to check this right now, but I think I remember noting that it was not capitalized, and that surprised me.
That would also surprise me. That sounds very
capitalized. Oh, no, I'm wrong. Okay. It is. I'm wrong. Well of Control, both of those words are capitalized.
Okay.
Which I'll go right there, because that was my biggest thing. you can't read that and not immediately think of the Well of Ascension.
Correct. That is also what I thought of.
I don't have anything else to add besides that, of just Well of Ascension.
Well, okay. Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, are we going to learn that there's like a well of some investiture on each planet? Because, frankly, I don't know if it doesn't have like a title, but don't we see a similar type of thing in Elantris, like at the end of the book? It's more of like a pool, but could be considered a well, maybe. I'm like, I say this as in notably different from, like, you know, we see earlier in the story, like the Hoyneder Peaks and the pool of water, which is like a perpendicularity and things like that. I mean, separate from that, like a, I don't know, not a pool perpendicularity, but a separate well. I don't know. I have no thought, real crucial thoughts to add to it, but I'm like, does everyone have every planet have some well of, insert name for investiture here, Well of Ascension, Well of Control? Is that what we're looking at, or is this just
finding out that a perpendicularity on Roshar had the name Well of Control by someone who is clearly Cosmere aware would hit about a 2 out of 10 on surprising for me. That for someone to name a perpendicularity on Roshar the Well of Control seems completely feasible to me, because, like you said, on Elantris, on Scadrial, again on Scadrial, we defend it in Mistborn Era 2, not the Well of Ascension, but the other one. And then in Six of the Dusk, there's that magic pool that they hide in, et cetera, et cetera. So cool, magical bodies of water, one name to the Well of Control, not a huge shock to me. I'm just now wondering, okay, what exactly are we talking about? Are we just referring to cultivation's perpendicularity and that's called the Well of Control? Or are we talking about the Pure Lake? Like any number of things. Could we be talking about that huge whirlpool on the other side of the world in the Wandersail? You know, there's a whole bunch of different things that could be categorized as the Well of Control, but I'm just curious on what exactly we're talking about.
Frankly, if I had to put my chips, like put my stake down on something, I think this is just a name for one of the perpendicularities, and I think this is going to be something that's going to be relevant in the back half, that we're going to be following a story and it's going to be more commonly known as like, this is the Well of Control. Like it's more of a defined named location, I guess, similar to the Well of Ascension. Not like a major plot point. There won't be a book titled that, I don't think. If so, then I'd say Brandon needs to come up with a new idea and new book titles. But yeah, I feel like this is like not going to be relevant here, but like once the back half comes out, looking back and being like, oh yeah, see, it was mentioned here, you know.
Was our theory that the author of these epigraphs could be the Sleepless? Is that where we went with this last time?
That was my theory, yeah. You guys seem to sign on to it fairly well.
Yeah. Nothing here necessarily disproving that, so I feel like that's the leading theory, regardless of this point. I was curious, though, as we were talking about this Well of Control and having that as being compared to the Well of Ascension, could this be like a Scadrian term? Is this maybe an indication that this could be like Ghost Bloods talking, or any world hopper from Scadrial, and their term for the perpendicularity on Roshar is Well of Control, because that's how they name perpendicularities or something like that.
I could see where you're going with that. I would lean towards whoever the author being Rosharan, but also Cosmere aware, because they care about the Heralds. They care about Odium. They care about Honor. Honor and Odium are having their clash. Odium's coming to kill us, blah, blah, blah. We can't stop him from destroying us. That seems very Roshar involved. but they're also using plenty of terms, like you just said, Elliot, that we've seen other places. So
whoever this is, they know a lot about what's going on.
Right.
Okay. My only question, do y'all have any guesses? It's pretty easy for us to make guesses on the Well of Control. Do y'all have any semblance of an idea of what this within? It says we must travel to the Well of Control within the shroud of the fragments of the dead moon.
Yeah.
I wondered with this dead moon, the first idea that popped into my head, which I don't fully believe in, but the first thing that jumped into my head was Braze, because we just know that that's like a destroyed planet in a way, but that's like a planet, not a moon. And fragments, I don't think it's fragmented, it's just on fire, you know? So I don't think it's that. It is my question, and I don't remember when we read Yumi, was that like a thing? Was it like a fragmented? I know that it was like something with a moon, but I don't know if it was like a fragmented moon. Anyways, I'm just throwing the ball out there. Do y'all know anything about this? Do y'all have any ideas?
I have two ideas, but I'll let Elliot go first so we don't rabbit trail too hard.
I don't have a lot. Yumi is where I went because of Shroud, because of the whole darkness nightmare thing going on. Yumi's planet. Kamashi, I want to say, was the name of that planet. And there was another planet orbiting them. And like the end of the book, they go there and find people.
Oh, but yeah. And the other species is like the Aeon Dai or something like that. And we've seen them once or twice before.
Yes.
No, what are they called? There's some.
Been a hot minute.
Yeah. Four-armed alien people who have like showed up in brief cameos throughout the Cosmere so far. Shodai or something like that.
That sounds right.
Shodel.
Oh.
Shodai.
Getting closer.
Something like that. Anyway, I'm afraid to coppermind anything these days. Even though it has a time machine function, I still don't coppermind anything these days. So my Cosmere trivia is steadily going downhill. Now, that being said, the Well of Control within the Shroud of the Fragments of the Dead Moon. Okay, now that makes me think. The Shroud of the Fragments of the Dead Moon, I would gather that that has nothing to do with Roshar. That we are traveling to the Well of Control, which is somewhere else within the Shroud of the Fragments of the Dead Moon. That's option number one. Option number two, track with me. There's three moons on Roshar, right? There's the blue one, the purple one, and the red one. Is that true? No. The blue one, the green one, and the purple one?
I want to say there was a green.
Because they have to do with honor, cultivation, and... Yeah, okay. So there's the blue one, the purple one, and the green one. Gnomon is one of them. I don't remember the other two. Sorry, I failed my trivia test. Okay, so there's the three moons of Roshar. One of them is dead. Would that be honor? Gnomon? The blue one? Is the blue moon dead?
I think that's the logical guess. I don't know which one, but let's say honors.
But it's not fragmented that we know, at least. It seems to be...
From...
Moonish in the sky?
Right. But, like, the power on it could be fragmented? I don't know. There's multiple readings of that. But anyway. The other option, if we're talking about the Rosharan system, is each... In the Rosharan system, there are 13... 12? Is that how math works? 13 planets in the Rosharan system. There are the three inner planets that we're talking about, that we always talk about, which is Ashen, Braze, and Roshar. And then in the outer belt, there are 10 gas giants that the Voren have named after their 10 heralds. And they're different colors, and it's all very nice and symmetrical. What wonderful. We could feasibly be talking about Yezrian's planet because he's dead. and that might have exploded a gas giant somewhere. That I don't buy into that, but that's also where my brain went. So all that to say, I would place my chips on the Well of Control not being on Roshar, and the Shroud of the Fragments of the Dead Moon is Secret Project 5. We're going to talk about that. Or the Back 5. We're going to talk about that. This is something that we're planting for a long time in the future that doesn't even have to do with Roshar. That's my bet. And we're going to go see the Sleepless somewhere else.
I think I'd vote along with you pretty closely. My guess is the purpose of what we're reading here is going to feed into some of the breadcrumbs we've actually already picked up from other Cosmere books, of that there's going to become a moment here where people are leaving Roshar, where people are trying to get away from Roshar as much as they can. And these epigraphs are like just another example of that. They're saying, oh man, this is going down. Honor and Odium are about to fight for the last time. We need to get out of here. That's the takeaway, I think.
Just had a random thought that it could have to do with Threnody in some way. The Shroud of the Fragments of the Dead Moon. Seems kind of Threnody creepy-esque, but that's a stretch. Okay. Chapter 40. We are walking up to the Stoneward Monastery. Let's just talk about Zeth for the first half of whatever, and then Aelin second half. Walk up to the Stoneward Monastery. We find a bunch of people hiding in their houses, which I was not expecting. I don't know what I was expecting, but I was not expecting to find everybody just chilling in their houses. Like, what's the Hero of Ages? When the smokes or when the mist is killing everybody, they just go run and hide in their houses and start cannibalizing each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. nice Hero of Ages reference. Yeah, so I was not expecting that of them just hiding it during the day and coming out at night. I don't know what I was expecting, but not that. And then we go fight the Stone Ward Lady in chapters 41 and 42.
Have you guys looked at your physical copies and seen the map?
No, I meant to.
There's a nice map of... I can't see my camera when I do this. So I can't see if I'm doing this right or not. Yep. There's a nice map of Shinovar with some detail, and it shows like a couple city names, and it shows the locations of all the monasteries. Page 404, if you have your physical copy handy. Super helpful, and I'm a visual person. I got to see it in front of me, so it was super cool for me. We're starting, I didn't realize this actually until I looked at the map. We're starting at the very furthest southern tip of Shinovar. That is where... Yep. Zeth's hometown of Clearmount and the Stone Ward Monastery, all the way here at the bottom. All the way at the very top is the Bondsmith Monastery, next to it, what is depicted as a very large city called Ayabiza?
Ayabiza.
Something like that. So I actually pulled this map up.
So we're going to go, hey. I mean, just quick... guess on the map here. We're gonna go Stoneward, Willshaper, Elskaller, Lightweaver, Edge Dancer, Dustbringer, then like Truth Watcher, Skybreaker, Windrunner, Bondsmith, or something like that.
I actually wanted to ask you guys if you had some guesses, because I wanted to go on record and try and get another prediction win on you. Trevor, I almost would say the same as you. I'm going to make one addition, and I'll say it out because I want it on air so we can reference it back later and say, ha, I got it. Stoneward, I think it's going to go Stoneward, Willshaper, Elskaller, Lightweaver, Truthwatcher up to that northwest corner, then back down to Edge Dancer, Dustbringer, Skybreaker, Windrunner, Bondsmith.
Yeah, that probably makes more sense than what I said. And Paul, you don't have your book in front of you, so you have to blindly guess. Go for it.
But this is quick nerdy reference. I think the reason I'm so like drawn by this actually is because this gives me total flashbacks to playing any MMO you've ever played, where you go to the hub city and you pick up a quest, and quest says you need to go collect 10 objects And those 10 objects are in 10 different cities. So you, as the character, have to pull up your map and like optimize a path and be like, oh, well, I've got these other side quests too. So I could go do this quest here and get that one there and then go to this one, that one, that one, that one, that one. Go back to the home city, cash in all the quests at the same time, watch that XP ramp up and level up. That is exactly what Kaladin and Zeth are doing here.
Well, I can't get out of the head space of like big Elden Ring or Breath of the Wild influence, where there's a bunch of little shrines everywhere. You got to walk around and each one you're going to either fight a boss or solve a puzzle. And then you're going to level up a little bit and then you move to the next one. And you can do them in pretty much whatever order you want, but there's definitely a first one and a last one and the rest of them. Yeah. They're big Elden Ring influence here, Brandon, and you're not hiding it.
I was going to say it's like the each time you beat one, then you get the Honor Blade to hypothetically you could use and use those access those surges, right? You know, like I don't know how many you can wield at once. I don't know how that works, but like
just got like six of them wielding all the surges.
Exactly.
Somebody on their bingo board has Zeth wields two Honor Blades at the same time or something like that. I think I do.
Yeah, I need to go. We need to pull those back up. I was going to say, Elliot, you're right. It's very reminiscent of like a video game quest, like collect the 10 things, collect all these, you know, different ones. And sometimes in video games, that's like a little tedious or obnoxious at times. Depends, you know, obviously it could be awesome. And in this case, I'm like so stoked because I'm like, I want to see a real one-on-one fight of each of these orders. Like that's what I've wanted from the beginning. I'm like, I want to see a Dustbringer fight, like a one-on-one duel, you know, and we got to see that with the Stone Ward. I feel like this is like almost, I feel like it is Brandon's opportunity to showcase the orders, or especially some of the lesser known ones. Like we're starting with Stone Ward, which we understand that the powers, I guess, a bit, but this is where we really see it showcased way more. And especially going to Will Shaper next, I'm like, we really haven't seen any will shaping much, you know, like we have not, which is interesting. I'm very, very on board for this. I think this sounds really fun. So I want to talk about, if it's all right, if we talk about the duel that Zeth has with the lady, I forget the name. It was like her first, like had the same name as whoever she descended from. It was like Safa, son Safa or whatever. Like it was something like that, wasn't it? Or
something like
I'm making that up. Yeah. I don't remember. Anyways, there's a name of this person and Zeth fights them and it's a pretty interesting duel because he's kind of in a holding pattern, can't do anything unless he can use his other surge of division. Intentionally gets put into a grave, I guess. It gets intentionally encased in stone by the Stone Ward. I guess the Stone Ward thinks that he's a Windrunner. Is that right? Is that like the impression that she has? Is that he's a Windrunner Radiant? Knows he can use the lashings, but doesn't think he can use division. I think I could be wrong, but the impression I had is that this lady knows Zeth and thinks that maybe he still has the Windrunner Honor Blade or is a Windrunner or something like that.
Yeah.
And so he kind of gets to pull a fast one on her by using division, breaking out, and then stabbing her. It was quite intense. He stabs her right through the face, pins her to this pillar. Which I was questioning if that's doable, because isn't the whole thing with shard blades like, yes, you could stab somebody, but it, whatever it is, it passes straight through them, right? Like, couldn't you not pin somebody to a wall? Because wouldn't it, like, you'd stab them and then they just fall straight through it?
Okay.
So that's what I thought, but I don't know. No, I know there's more things to that.
I like your idea there because I'm not convinced this person's actually real. That whoever the defender lady is, Elliot, did you find a name yet?
Rit. Her name is Rit, daughter Clutio.
Rit, daughter Clutio. And Zeth knows her from before. She was one of the ones who exiled Zeth before. And you're right. Zeth fights her with his Skybreaker sword, Skybreaker Radiant Blade. And he has a couple different options. He could fight her with Nightblood. He could fight her with Division, and eventually he does, because his Spren lets him. But he fights him with his Skybreaker sword, and she then evaporates to black smoke after everything's said and done. And Kaladin's like, what the heck? What did you do that for? Like, we could have talked to her and gained some information. And I was like, all right, hold up. We're specifically not using Nightblood. There's a whole dialogue of how Nightblood wants to be used and is not. And she still evaporates to black smoke. And I'm like, okay. Was she like some apparition from the Unmade, or is that just epic? So Brandon put it in because evaporating to black smoke is epic. Like, what did you guys think of that small detail? I was hung up on that we don't evaporate to black smoke when hit by shard blades.
No, Trevor, something I was going to add also that I think goes with your point is I wanted to ask y'all, she speaks after dying to a shard blade. Like I don't remember the words she says off the top of my head, but she says something very ominous and whatnot. And I was thinking, I'm like, okay, I know from the Way of Kings, right? The whole thing is like people's Taravangian is like harvesting people's last words in search of the most important words a man can say or whatever.
Death rattle.
Yes, the death rattles. So death rattles are a real thing. But my understanding is that it does not happen if you die because your soul is severed from your body by a shard blade, your eyes burn out. Like, I don't think there's like my corpse sits there and spouts out insert random words here. Is that the case? Because I feel like Taravangian would have expedited his, well, he had to masquerade, I guess, as a hospital. But in my head, I'm like, I feel like he could have been way more efficient using a shard blade to kill a bunch of people and get the words, you know?
Right.
I don't feel like that should be possible.
I think the order of events is stab her through the forehead, and she says, your family is waiting for you, or something cryptic like that. And then she goes poof. Is that correct, Elliot?
More or less. He stabs her through the face. It talks a little bit in here about how, like, the edge of the weapon is not sharp, and then Zeth commands it to be sharp, and then it slices through her. She's very dead. It actually notes that the shard blade can slice through her because she's now dead. And then Zeth walks up to the corpse, and the corpse says, your family awaits you, pilgrim, and then disintegrates into black smoke. I don't have answers. But I think another factor going on here that might help explain all this is she also is getting power from some unexplained source. That's brought up a couple of times, is Zeth is going, oh my goodness, Honor Blades draw power way more than Radiants do. Where is she getting all this power from? There's all these glowing spheres on the walls and none of them are getting drained. She's drawing power from somewhere else. So I feel like whether she's an apparition or not, whether she's there or not there, I feel like we're dealing with reanimated body from the Unmade or fully controlled by the Unmade, something along those lines of drawing power directly from the Unmade source and on death disintegrates back into Unmade smokiness.
And it's certainly worth noticing that after the reason that Zeth is like, we need to go to all the monasteries is because after this person is defeated, the people are like better all of a sudden. They like kind of heal, like kind of like removed a curse off the land type of thing.
Yes.
Cleanse the land. So that's very unmade activity, not like this person is corrupted and bad, right? Like that's very much a curse has been lifted. So I totally didn't think of this person as being not real, but all of the evidence points that it's either maybe some animated body, some extra power being fed to this person, or this person being a physical light weaving, which we have seen. You know, it could be some kind of twisted, unmade version of light weaving. So, who knows?
Anything else besides your family awaits you or whatever? How many? All right, let's do the over-under. How many of his family is still alive? All three, 2 out of 3, 1 out of 3.
Well, we already have a claim or like a guess that his father is dead.
Correct. Ishar has... Taravangian? And Ishar? One of them claimed that his father was dead. Maybe both.
Yeah. I feel like the obvious answer is 2 out of 3 are still alive.
Okay. So his mother and his sister.
It's either 2 out of 3 or 0 out of 3.
I would say it's either 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 3.
I agree with Trevor on this because I'm like the whole like the villain says, oh, your father, your family's dead. You know, I'm like, then it usually turns out that maybe they're not, or maybe they were deceived or something. I'm like, I could fully see that Zeth has been told your father is dead. Instead, through this cleansing, he saves or finds his father. Could be very possible. So I'm kind of in the 3 of 3 camp, but I hold on to that very loosely because it could very well be that it's not the case. But I think the fact that it's been mentioned several times by villainous characters makes me think that it's not true. You know, it's like the mouth of Sauron action, you know,
right,
type of things.
So there's another weirdness though to this in that that's not how Zeth interprets this. At the very end of chapter 42, after a bunch of Adolin stuff, we flip back to like 2 pages of Kaladin and Zeth. And Zeth says this. It's actually Syl talking to Zeth. Syl frowned. What was it she said? Just that my family waited for me. The other honor bearers, it seems. He seems to have interpreted that as the honor bearers?
Does Zeth automatically make the assumption that he's not talking, or that she's not talking about his immediate family? She's talking about the honor bearers?
That's how I read it.
No, actually, now that you mention it, I think you're right. I remember hearing that, and that being the implication, that it's not like your family, like your mother, father, and sister are waiting for you, but it's like, he's trained with all the honor blades and all the things that go with that, and it's like he probably essentially readopted all the others who did that as his family is my guess, my understanding. And so, yeah, I think we may have overthought it. I think it is referring to the honor bearers.
I think it's also extremely possible that Zeth misunderstood, that Zeth is so one track mind in all of this that he go, oh, my family, the honor bearers. And whereas like he needs to learn, he needs to remember that his family's here and that he should be helping or saving them or something like that. Or this unmade is going to try and dangle his family in front of him. And Zeth is going to be like the super literal, straightforward one. Like, why would I save my family when I can save 1,000 people over there? You know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I had one other question before we move forward. Okay. So when we get a glimpse at the start and it talks about the honor blade, the stone ward honor blade, it mentions that it is not the blade that Talonil had when he came back from damnation.
Okay, It mentions that it's not the blade that he showed up to the Shattered Plains with.
Yes.
It mm-hmm. is the blade that he showed up to Kolinar with.
Okay.
So at the end of Way of Kings, we get the epilogue where Wit is hanging out outside the gates of Kolinar. You know, timeliness is the most important thing to humans or blah, 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 blah. Tahn shows up, dragging an honor blade behind him. He collapses, and then we don't see him till like halfway through Words of Radiance, and he has a different shard blade.
See, I guess I just didn't remember that later on it was a different shard blade. In my head, I was like, why did... So in my head, I didn't think of the Kolinar difference. I was like, so why... What blade did Talonel show up with outside of Kolinar in front of Hoid? What the heck blade did he show up with there if the Honor Blade was here in Chittavar with this person this whole time? Like, something's not adding up, because they show that that blade was an Honor Blade, but he like falls and it doesn't turn to mist. It's like, oh my gosh, yeah, this is a Herald, this is an Honor Blade, this is a big deal. And then you had this. So I was confused, but that's a good distinction. So I guess that switch was simply just to explain that the Honor Blade could be back in Shinovar. We don't know how it got back to Shinovar. That seems a bit odd to me.
So,
but anyways,
it seems a little papered over to me too. However, the implication is that Tahn comes back, raving that the desolation is here, blah, 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 blah. The Shin go to retrieve his blade, as they have with the other blades, because they have the ability to go do that, I guess, and then don't act upon the knowledge that Tahn was back. That's the important thing. So they have the full knowledge that Tahn is back, or somebody does in Shinovar, and then they don't act upon their knowledge. Zeth has this whole little monologue of, you know, we're supposed to be preparing and we have failed. The desolation's here, blah, blah, blah. And somebody went to go retrieve Tahn's blade and now it's back and they still haven't acted upon their mandate.
And that could be the exact reason why the Unmade is there. Maybe Odium knew that the Shin had the Honor Blades, had the power to take action once the desolation started, once the Singers and Fuse started taking over the world. That was what they were supposed to do, apparently, is come raging out of Shinovar and fight back. So he sends this one Unmade, allegedly Chemo-Arish, whatever is going on there, to stop them, to corrupt them, to make sure that didn't happen.
Question. They say they've been locked inside for 2 years, right? That's the time frame they give?
I think so.
What happens on the other side of Roshar 2 years ago? Is that the first coming of the Everstorm, or is that earlier?
Should be roughly Everstorm, right? Because there's a 1 year gap in between Everstorm and Rhythm of War. But have we had another year's worth of stuff happen in between then and now?
Possibly? So the Way of Kings is like a couple months. Words of Radiance is like more than that. But from the start of Words of Radiance to the end of Words of Radiance, Shallan hangs out in the war camps for like, 60 days or whatever the countdown is. Oathbring is really short, time frame wise, not page length, and then there's a year gap. So, shoot, that would be like the beginning of the Way of Kings.
Probably, roughly.
Would it be from the point that essentially when Tahn comes back? Is that like the date maybe? My head, that might be more feasible.
Maybe.
But it's probably one of those, and we don't I don't remember for sure if it's 2 years or what, but we know it's something, I guess, something notable.
I was trying to tie in the Shallan mom theory. I think we're going to show up to whatever Chanarach is. Is she a Lightweaver or is she something? Or is she Dustbringer?
She's a Dustbringer. I think that's what my brain is
telling me. I think we're going to show up to the Dustbringer monastery and they're going to be like, yeah, there was a couple days there where her blade disappeared. That was kind of scary. And that's going to be the Chanarach confirmation. That's my theory. I don't have much to back that up, but if there was another herald to go to Braze and then come back at the same time Talon does, the Shin would know about it, is what I'm trying to say.
But with that, I don't have anything else to say. I am excited that we kind of have the game plan for Zeth's journey to cleanse Shinnevar. I'm glad we have that in tow, because before that, it felt like it was a holding pattern of him being like, well, I'll know when I know. And his friend being like, maybe you should just kill everyone. And then he's like, well, maybe. And then here we are. And this is something that I'm happy about, because this seems like a good cause at the moment, because we've seen this first example. And if we're assuming they're all like that, then it's like, yeah, something's corrupted. Something's wrong. We're going to go cleanse that. Seems to be a good, noble, worthy cause. So, yeah, I'm pleased with our little adventure with Zeth and Kaladin.
Adolin time. Adolin does a bunch of fighting and he wins. And that's it. All right. Anything else, gentlemen?
That's a pretty succinct summary. I mean, it's not the most groundbreaking Adolin moments. One thing that I wrote in my reactions as I was reading this, Adolin is like, I don't know. I honestly feel like Adolin is too good, too powerful of a warrior, given how hyped up the fused and the formidable enemies that we have been set up as well. There's lots of mentions in here of him fighting like multiple, like 3-4 fused at one time and winning. And at least in my head, that's not feasible. He is the most renowned, best duelist. But I think back to like the struggles Kaladin had with them, and Kaladin, let's say hypothetically in a 1v1 duel, that Adolin would actually be the victor. That Adolin skill wise, as a duelist, would be better. But Adolin is not a Radiant, cannot heal himself. He does have a shard plate, and has a great relationship with Maya. All these things, you know. But to me, it does feel almost a little. This isn't a complaint. I should say that first. I think it's awesome. I think it's super cool. And I'm totally down for Adolin just being that big of a boss, like being so good with the blade. He can just duel these fused multiples at a time and win. But it did kind of feel like a power adjustment in my brain of how strong the fused are. I feel like it definitely more so brought my expectation of how dangerous and strong the fused are, rather than bring Adolin up. It did bump Adolin up, because I don't think that should be possible, at least given the previous examples we have of fighting fused. But yeah, that was my thought. I think it's epic. I think these scenes are cool. But that was my thought. I'm like, this seems like Adolin is untouchable for now versus these guys.
I think you're not wrong that Adolin is very powerful in these scenes, no question. But I think you got to remember one thing. You got to remember, there's not very many fused here. There's very, very few fused. Like, I think we've seen maybe 4 total so far. most of what he's fighting here are regals. There's Stormform and Direform was new to me, this description of Direforms, which I was trying to look that up because I couldn't remember exactly how they're described, but like big teeth or something like that.
Direform is like the Warform upgrade of the Parshendi on the Shattered Plains, and then Regals are the lightning guys that we also saw at the end of Words of Radiance.
But I think, Trevor, help me here if I say something wrong. The Regals are not surge binding.
Correct.
They are just
they have a storm spren with them, but that is not a high spren in terms of
like
Night Radiant spren.
Not like a Radiant spren.
Right. That'd be like he's not fighting Radiance.
Right. He's like equipping he's fighting storm forms, and they have the equivalent of equipping like a wind spren to help them fight, if that helps you at all.
So
is it almost like, in my brain, I think of it almost as like a soul caster, but for combat, like instead of transferring grain type of thing, like spren as a tool rather than a bond. Right.
If you want to, if you want to power scale this, you could put it equivalent of like, a soul caster magic, but not Night Radiant magic.
So I think he's still like the fact that he's in Shardplate and has a Shardblade still puts him at kind of another level higher in just raw power from most of who he's fighting, with the exception being the Heavenly Ones. There's a couple of those flying around, and then our friend, the white marbled guy,
Abidi the Monarch.
He's a fused. So when they are dueling, it's kind of apples to apples.
It's pumpkin to apples, is what Paul's saying.
Okay.
Abidi or Abidi, I never remember which one they say.
I'm pretty sure they say Abidi. That's what threw me off.
So Abidi
the Monarch
is a Heavenly One. He's a Windrunner equivalent. However, they make it very explicit that he's not flying. They have hamstringed him enough to where he is consolidating his power so that he doesn't have to die or retreat or whatever till the next Everstorm. And this is actually something I wanted to point out. This is a very interesting dynamic. There is one Everstorm on the rain schedule between now and the contest. And they have this little side chat of Abidi doesn't want to retreat because he's going to miss out on all the fun. And if Abidi dies, then he can't lead this charge. So he comes out of this portal, and he's noticeably injured from the Shallan fight. So, Paul, back to what you were saying, I also got that impression that Adolin is way outperforming what he should be here. That being said, it's Adolin, so that's epic and that's awesome, and you love to see Adolin outperforming what he should be able to do. Though I don't know if that's actually true, because there's only one Heavenly One, there's only one fused that he's actually fighting, and his shard plate makes him immune to all the storm forms, to all the regals. Like, the lightning specifically doesn't do anything to his shard plate. So he's 1v1ing Abidi, which is good, like he's outperforming there. But Abidi has been hamstrung, and the other Heavenly Ones are like dealing with the archers or something. So at the end of this battle, I don't know how all the archers are still alive, which they seem to be just fine. But there was a weird power dynamic thing going on that I also wasn't fully tuned into, like you're saying, Paul. It felt off, but I was fine with it by the end of it.
And the points y'all are bringing up are great points that I don't think I realized. I kept noticing that there were Heavenly Ones and things around, and I think in my head I was picturing at this point that basically the majority of our opposing forces were going to be fused. I think I had that in my head, which was not a good expectation. And you're right, I think it's more of the Dire Forms and Regals, which are much more understandable to beat. I think I had the wrong thing of imagining every enemy soldier as a fused. And I'm like, they should be routed in like 15 minutes in my head.
Right.
It's like, there's no shot they have, you know?
And that fight that you're imagining is about to happen on the Shattered Plains. All the fused are being sent to the Shattered Plains where Sigzil is and all the rest of the Windrunners. So we are going to see full Night Radiant versus full fused battle. It's just not here.
Okay.
All of that said, I think by the end of day three here, this battle has gone surprisingly well. I feel like a few chapters ago, not that long ago, when we were all trying to predict, what's going to happen at all these different battles, because we've got Azamir, Shattered Plains, and Thalen City are all supposedly going to come under attack here. I feel like we predicted that the Azamir battle here with Adolin was not going to go well at all. And so far, it's gone swimmingly. Like, it could not have gone better so far. So were we just completely wrong, or are we setting up for a twist here?
Well, in chapter 42, they ask themselves the same question. Like, day one went great, but now they're setting up for like a siege, like a portal siege. And that could go very interestingly. And Maya talks about how they flew off to go get some more fused. And then Maya runs off to go get some honor spren, which we can talk about this for a second. Maya makes the decision by herself that, hey, Lasting Integrity is not that far. I could go swim over to Lasting Integrity, go talk some honor spren into showing up to help us. And I read that and I was like, okay, what? I was kind of confused. Didn't we just do that? Like literally 3 days ago in storyline time that we were just at Lasting Integrity, and then Maya's going to go back there and have a new argument to present to them or something like that. Like all the honor spend, we just harvested that field. Any honor spend that are willing to show up have already shown up, and now she's going to go back. What'd you guys think of that tagline at the end there?
Well, there was a little crowd of honor spren who, I'm trying to remember back to those closing chapters of that book, had joined the cause but weren't quite sure what to do next. I think they were like walking out of the city, and there's just like a small collection of honor spren. They're like, yeah, we'll help you, and then we didn't really see them. So
and then there's also the Navy captain guy who's hanging out at Lasting Integrity and wants to fight on the Shadesmar side, but doesn't want to bond to Radiant. We cover that on day one with Shallan. So maybe she's going to go get him to be a Navy guy on Shadesmar.
One of the things I was thinking about is, so back in Rhythm of War, where we have the epic moments with Adolin and Maya at the whole trial scene, she comes out, says, "We chose," all the things. I don't remember exactly, but there were like many spren there observing, right? Like many spren in the vicinity that were witnesses. And to me, I felt like maybe not at that moment, but I feel like things may begin to stir. If we think of them as people, then things might begin to stir. They may begin to reconsider after witnessing that. And we might have an increase or a surge of Radiance potentially if spren changed their mind pretty much on whether or not they'd go. And I'm wondering if Maya going back now, the spren might be in a different place where they would reconsider. Because you're right. I kind of thought that too. Like all the spren who were willing to go potentially bond to Radiant have kind of been slated to do so. They've kind of made up their minds already. But I feel like maybe there's an opportunity for reconsideration.
Well, I just had a thought. Maybe this is going to go down a different way than I was thinking, or maybe we're thinking. Because initially, in addition to the whole we've already got their help thing, I was kind of thinking, what good are more Honor Spren going to do for you even if they do come to the battle scene and bond 20 people, what good is a brand new Windrunner who has never used their powers before? That I feel like that's going to be more dangerous than helpful to throw somebody in the middle of the battlefield with all these like lashings flying everywhere, and they've never had more than, you know, 30 minutes of practice. That doesn't sound beneficial at all. But Trevor, you mentioned the Navy guy, and that got me thinking, what if she's not bringing Honor Spren to make more Radiance? What if it's literally an army of Honor Spren in Shadesmar to attack the army in Shadesmar?
Yeah.
What if it's, hey, I'm not asking you to come bond humans. I'm just asking you to, like, physically, because they like show it physically in Shadesmar, bring your people over here and attack this army that's right here.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of... So the dynamic at the beginning of this book and the end of last book is, we understand your plight. We don't trust the humans. So we're not going to bond. We're not going to go bond humans. Yeah, I mean, so what if Maya's not asking them to go bond humans? What if they're just like, hey, we need the Navy over here to go sink some fused into the beads. Interesting. Anything else for episode 240?
I think what? That was all great points. Only other thing I was going to say is I've continued to love Adolin's budding relationship with Yonagon. It's continued to grow, and I feel like we start to see the wheels turning in Yonagon's head of sticking up for his people, even fighting potentially with his people. Hopefully we'll get to see them play towers. It's looking really great there. I think that's my biggest light in that story. But Paul, I think Elliot had something too, maybe. But
Paul, do you remember that little character ranking thing that we made at the end of Oathbringer, where it gave you two characters and you said which one you liked more?
Yes. Yonagon was definitely at the
bottom. Yonagon was like 45th out of 48 or something for you.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, literally who? I don't know who this is. I would love to do that again with an updated character list at the end of Wind and Truth and see how far Yonagon has climbed for you. Because Yonagon has definitely climbed for me.
I was going to say, it's definitely got to climb for everybody, because when we did that, I do remember that list. It was like he was in the list, he was in the grouping of people who, like, I'm like, yeah, I recognize that name, but there's no character that I'm attributing to this name, really, hardly at all, you know? And so, yeah, that's absolutely changed. But that's really funny. I'm glad you brought that up.
Just one other thing I wanted to mention, because it was a bit of a throwaway line, but I'm got a suspicion that maybe it could be important. In the aftermath of the battle at the end of 42, chapter 42 here, where they're celebrating, Adolin is making amends with the Azish general guy. They're all friends now. Somebody makes a mention. I don't even remember who it was. They're like, oh yeah, one of the casualties we had today was so-and-so Soulcaster got dragged into the portal. Moving on. Yada, yada, yada. And they're like, oh yeah, he was almost like fully overcome by the Soulcaster disease. Oh well. Sorry for that guy. Noticeably, he was not killed.
Yeah.
He was drug into the portal. And I wonder if that could be important. Could the enemy somehow force him to use his Soulcaster? Or maybe they can just straight up take the Soulcaster off of him. It's just a Fabrial, right? And use it. Is there any way that could help them swing the tides of this battle at all? Of now they can Soulcast.
You want my prediction?
Definitely.
We're gonna lose our dome.
Ooh.
They're going to force him to Soulcast that huge single bronze sheet dome into like oil. And it's going to go.
Ooh, okay. No, you're onto something. Because remember how they made a whole big deal about Soulcasting water into bronze to try and block the people on the way in. And remember, soulcasters, they like can only soulcast certain things into certain other things. Well, we have proof that soulcaster can do bronze. So they could just do the reverse, soulcast the bronze dome into water. Should rain on everybody for a second. Interesting. Ooh, my graphic is going to come back.
Yeah, we're going to lose our dome. Yeah. That's my prediction.
We're going to have to do some math on how many, you know.
Yes.
You how know, many tons how many of cubic, water about to drop cubic on us?
Meters are falling from the sky. Yeah.
Let's go. No,
that I did catch that moment, and I remember them being like, oh, the guy was almost overtaken by soulcaster sickness or whatever it is. But yeah, I did not think about that, Elliot. I think you're absolutely onto something. And man, that's going to be a devastating blow, because what we've like their whole basis is like, we at least have this awesome dome to fight in, you know, if you remove that. I mean,
the only thing that really does is it lets the heavenly ones out. The rest of the rest of the army, they can't fly. So you still have like an arena, but letting those heavenly ones fly around, that's still a problem.
But that's a pretty big difference, though.
Yes.
Like, well,
opening that up.
Besides dropping metric tons of water on the heads of your enemy army, like that's also important, isn't it?
Yeah,
right. I guess so, yeah. I'm curious to see. I'm fully like assuming this is going to happen. I'm like, yeah, I'm wondering how, like, what that will do. If it's just like, oh no, everybody's wet now, or if it's going to like kind of incapacitate some people from like the force or whatever.
No,
I don't actually know. It probably won't.
We've foreshadowed the dropping the oil in the arena to firestorm the whole thing. They're going to literally turn the whole arena into oil and light it, and the Azish are going to not have a good day.
Yikes.
I think you're right.
Adolin will be fine, but
yeah.
Anyway, is that it for today,
gentlemen? That's it.
Do we have Elliot's theme, or is that?
Oh, yeah, the end of day three.
It is the end of day. No, so yeah, we're not done. Okay, that's all the notes for the chapters, but I am going to steal more of your time to talk about the theme of the day, because it is the end of the day, day three. And I have to do this a lot more often now that we have 10 days instead of 5 parts. Okay, where's my notes? Here's my notes. Theme for day three. This one is tough, because in this day, we only had two perspectives. Well, three, right? Because there's the Kaladin and Zeth, and they kind of hop back and forth, but that's one plot line. And then you've got Adolin as the other one. So we have two very distinct plot lines, and they're very different. So trying to come up with a theme that ties the two of them together for this day three was difficult. Paul weighed in with a few thoughts before we went live recording, so I used some of that to get to this. But I think the theme of day three, to try and get it into one word, I brought it down to cause. Basically, why do we fight? And this comes up a couple times in the two different plot lines that we have. We've got the whole Kaladin and Zeth talking about what's right and what's wrong. And they're kind of building a friendship. They're kind of cracking into some of the deeper discussions. And they're talking about, kind of at least at the core, you know, how do we know what the right thing is? How do we know what we're fighting for? And there's a quote, I'm going to read a couple quotes here to try and tie all this together. There's a quote from Kaladin here at the end of chapter 42. So this is at the end here. So Zeth has just come out from defeating the shaman, and all the people around are like congratulating Zeth. And Zeth is really uncomfortable about it. He's thinking, I'm a soldier. I'm he who subtracts. Why in the world would you thank me for anything? And there's kind of this moment where Kaladin is saying, no, man, this is good. And here's what he says. This is what it's about, Zeth, what we do. Being a watcher at the rim, this is why. My father never understood, and I suspect your people never did either. You can. This is what we fight for. Those looks, those tears, that joy. Our duty has a cost, as you said. We have proof of that. But if there's a difference between us, it's this. I know the why. And they go on to then like argue about, you know, what is the why? Is it the law? Is it ourselves? Like, what is it? Yada, yada. But kind of that core theme there of what is the cause? Like, what is the why of what we're doing here? And Adolin in his chapters isn't quite so much dealing with a struggle of why. Adolin already knows why, but he's still kind of connecting with those around him with that why. They are facing the enemy and kind of having this big cross-cultural bonding moment as they come to help save the city. And Adolin has to win over the Azish and kind of prove to them, I'm not here in the historical sense of the Alethi to just conquer you and take your stuff. I'm here for a different why, and that's to help you. And there's another quote in chapter, this is way earlier, chapter 35, no, chapter 34, where Adolin is remembering something that his mother, Evie, told him. And she says this, care, fight for something, not simply because you're pointed that way by a monarch, no matter how beloved. And they're kind of like, Adolin's like wrestling a little bit with, am I here because Dalinar said I should be? Am I here for an actual reason? Those kinds of things. So
for the good of all Roshar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think this whole, why are we doing the things that we're doing, was enough of a running theme through chapter 3 for that to be the theme.
Sounds good. Anything else?
Well put. Nothing else. That was really well put, Elliot. I think that was inspiring and really exciting to learn about the cause alongside our heroes. So I have nothing else to add.
I do really like the undercurrent of deep questions that we've got in Wind and Truth here. There's a lot of just stuff you can take it on the surface if you want to. Oh, cool. Battle scenes, discovering things about the Shin. But if you read kind of these key moments, there's definitely this undercurrent of deep philosophical, who are we? What are we doing here? What's the purpose of all this? There's some big questions here. So I'm really excited for actually where this book is going.
All right. We can reconvene next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
See ya.
Toodles.